I ruined you there, didn't I?
A little bit. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight, episode 141, and we're talking about some cold weather precautions. And I do know we've talked in the past about, you know, winter camping or upping your thermal value and stuff like that. So we're not going to try and go over a bunch of stuff we already talked about before. But Frank, it was me. I thought it'd be a good idea to maybe go over some of the things that a lot of people overlook when they're going out in the woods. You know, simple things, maybe common sense. For those of you that are maybe a little bit more veteran or seasoned and going out in the woods and stuff, this might be a brush over for you. But, I mean, we'd still love to hear some of the things Ben and I may not cover on this. Maybe we forgot. Maybe we missed. So this is definitely a reach out to you folks and to try and get as much information on this. And keep in mind, people that are going into the woods that maybe for the first time, or not as familiar with it. And that's kind of where we're going, or kind of where I wanted to go for from this anyway. And what brought this on was because, obviously, the weather's getting colder. I was outside last night, and I was getting hit with snowflakes. Funny enough, I was rewiring the trailer. Anyway, I got thinking about, okay, how am I going to start changing things? Because I still want to take a few more trips in the four-wheeler. I want to get down on the trails and stuff a little bit. I want to, you know, have some outings. But that is where it is getting wet, not wetter, colder. I kind of got to switch gears in my thinking a little bit, and, you know, that's kind of where this came from. So what's some of the things I do to change my normal everyday going out? Not planning to stay in the woods potentially, but, you know, just going out in the woods kind of deal. What about you, Ben? I know we just kind of brushed on this really quickly. Ben was, he was on his own little adventure over the weekend, and he's free to chat as much or as little about that as he wants. But what's your thoughts on this topic, bud?
Wow, spot. No,
yeah, it's a great topic, and the thing is, there is a fair bit to it. But like, yeah, precautions. If you don't take them, what is this? An ounce of prevention is a pound of cure.
Yeah, ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, and that's kind of, especially here in Atlantic Canada, it's real easy to get screwed up with cold weather. You know what I mean? Because we do have very extreme things, and we've mentioned this before in the podcast. You may wake up and it's like minus 10 out, and then in the afternoon it might be plus 10, plus 15. Like, you're talking 20 degree weather swings sometimes more. I've seen more.
Well, and I can tell you, like, even the trip I did this weekend, I mean, we woke up with strong, you know, steady frost. I mean, there was ice on the water when we put canoes in at times. And then again, it got fairly warm during the day in the mid-teens, right? So when you're walking through the woods and you're pulling packs and boats and all that, you can get quite hot quite easy. But when you stop, you get real cold real quick. So the trick there is your layering. And we've talked about that before, mm-hmm. but if you have the right layering, you can deal with that. But even that has its own challenges, because now all of a sudden you have layers of clothes that you have to deal with that you've taken off because you're hot. You need to be kept accessible enough and dry and safe, so when you go to put them back on, they're still good. So that's that there in itself is a little bit, you know, a start on this conversation. And I don't think we'll dwell too much on layering, because it's a little bit of a different topic.
But and we have talked about it a little bit in the past. That's almost worth its own topic, proper layering, in all honesty. And I know I hear some people, I can actually hear the eyes rolling. Oh, how much can you talk about that? Honestly, there's a lot to it.
Oh, yeah. Proper layering actually can be a weight savings.
Hmm.
And that's the thing, is like, I don't always do it right. And I know I don't always do it right, because when I went this weekend, I was nervous about potentially getting cold. So I had a couple of heavier options that I took, which I really could have replaced with lighter, more efficient options. And I kind of regretted that in some ways. I mean, it was fine. Everything worked out good. And I managed to get there with great comfort, but you can improve it. And that's the thing, really thinking about your layering, taking those times to think about things before you do them can save you a lot of trouble and effort. I want to say heartache, but it's effort, really. Like, it's
time. It can be both. It can honestly be both.
Yeah.
Now, something I was thinking of. Now, over the week a little bit, I did try to get out and do a little hunting with my father-in-law. And in the mornings, we were going in, and it was cold. We were very layered up. I think at one point I had, let me think, thermal pants, long johns, undershirt, long sleeve shirt, sweater, coat, hat, because, you know, you're not moving around a lot. If you're moving around, probably a lot less because they wouldn't want to sweat, but just sitting there. And sometimes people going into the woods, that's what they want to do. They want to go in, they want to go hunting, they're just out for a hike, you know. They're not really potentially doing a whole lot of effort. And going in with that much layering, in the morning, I was still kind of cool. But then come the noon, I was starting to sweat. So that, once again, this all kind of works into the layering thing. But anyway, like you said, we're not going to beat a dead horse on the layering. I would love to have an entire topic just on layering. And if anybody's interested in that, please reach out to us to see if it is worthwhile to you folks. Because I feel like we do talk about cold weather camping and getting ready for cold and stuff like that. A significant amount, we do cover layering. But honestly, it would be a great open topic if we could get a couple people in on this and get a couple different points of view. So I'm sending that out there to you folks that listen to us. Give us a shout. If you want to come on the show, have a little chat about wearing, we would love to have you on. Is that safe to say, Ben?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth at all, but I feel like we're kind of on the same page with that.
I agree 100%.
But yeah, so some simple things you can do while you're out in the woods, not even out in the woods, if you're just out and about, some of these things are going to apply to you too. And one thing that I was thinking of, I was flipping back to some pictures of Mel and I, we had done some really cold weather bushcrafting once, and I think I've talked about this to you before, Ben, in that location around the train bridge, and it was minus 32 with the wind chill, it was peaking around minus 40, which is super cold. It was one of those freak Chinook winds or something that came in, and it just got real bitter cold, and maybe I'm using the wrong word there, but anyway, it was just kind of like a real freak cold front that blew in, and we had this trip planned. This was before we had Lily and stuff like that, and honestly, we're like, no, we're committing to this. This is our weekend. We want to go out. We want to practice some skills. And we found it was kind of a little bit of a surprise. And one of the main things that I want to chat about, which we talked about just before we came on the show, is we planned just to like sit on trees and stuff like that. We didn't bring any chair. Actually, I think we did bring a chair, but the bank we had to go down, we didn't want to bring them, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, we figured, okay, we'll just sit on a log. But the reality was, by the end of it, in that kind of cold weather, we had to put some sort of layering between us and anything that's solid and held the cold. Even though we were layered and stuff like that, sitting there, trying to get a fire going or huddling in next to the fire and stuff, it was taking heat out of us way faster than we were taking heat in with the fire, just sitting on the cold ground. Like, we've talked about it in the past, if you're sleeping, improving your sleep systems, you got to get something under you, because if you're sitting on something that's large and it's holding cold, it's a giant heat sink and it's going to pull that core temperature right out of you. And once it's gone, it's really hard to get it back.
Oh, yeah. Yes, for sure. And it's where you have to kind of, what is it, the three types of heat loss are convection, conduction, radiation?
Heat transfer. Not specifically heat loss, but heat transfer, yeah. Conduction, convection, and radiation. So if anybody doesn't know what those are, conduction, that should be easy enough. You're touching something. Convection, generally heat travels up, so the higher you are in a closed area, you know, little bungalows and stuff, you're going to get more heat at the bottom, or on the opposite of that, cold air sinks. Radiation, that's the kind of heat that you're getting from your campfire. It's radiating towards you.
I was going to say convection, you also want to think like a convection oven. It's where the air moving around is just stealing heat.
Yeah, and good point on that too. Yeah.
Radiation is the heat either that you're radiating away from your body. So that's where like the silver lining that reflects it back to you kind of helps. Like that's the radiating heat. And then conduction is when it's, you know, object to object. So it's where you're touching those cold objects. And those three methods alone can steal all your heat really, really fast. So it's what you really got to trend. And when your time is sitting on a cold object, it's going to keep stealing heat until it reaches the same temperature as you, or you reach the same temperature as it.
Temperature always equalizes in what, you know, like cold wants to move under hot, hot wants to move over above cold. It's going to balance out somewhere there. I actually had a picture for this one. If I can bring it up and this, oh no, that ain't it. That's the wrong one. Hold on. Here we go. Is that the right one? There we go. So this was actually kind of the setup we came to. I can't remember what it was with the chairs. I know we left them at the top of the hill, but maybe we tried sitting in them and the wind blowing over us because of that wind chill. Sitting in them was like impossible because you froze underneath and above. So we ended up opting sitting on the ground. And then of course, that was cold or something along those lines. Anyway, it led us to doing this. We cut some fir boughs and put on the ground to add that layer of protection between, you know, the cold ground and us. And then we tried to get in next to the fire, make some tea and stuff like that. And I mean, don't get me wrong. There's no snow, no nothing like that. This was before snow had stayed, but it was just that super freak cold time. Now, the date that Melissa posted this picture up, it's December 30th, 2014. But I believe it was, you know, somewhere earlier in the month. It was just posted later. But I know it was 2014 and somewhere in December. But it was just a freak cold period. Anyway, long story short, get some thermal layering between you and sheltering in. If you're out walking in the woods, you're out hunting, something like that, it's really cold, you got to get somewhere to get that wind away from you. Even if it's a slight breeze, it's amazing how little air movement it takes to create a lot of heat loss. Like, if you're ever interested, type in Google wind chill chart or something like that, and I can't remember what it is, but it doesn't take a lot of curve on the wind speed to really push that wind chill right to the hilt.
Oh, 100% agreed. And you notice it as soon as you walk into the woods, like as soon as you walk out of like a field or an open area, you notice it. What feels like a significant temperature change. But if you pull the thermometer out at that time, it's the same temperature. And you can feel it really quick. You know what I mean? So.
No, 100%. So, yeah.
So one of the precautions right there, you know, this is the topic. To stop the wind, I mean, you mentioned something to sit on, like creating that. And that does a couple of things. It's just any kind of break from the wind and anything to stop the air from moving around your body. So when you sit on those boughs, what you're doing is you're building a barrier between you and the cold ground and preventing air from getting between you and the cold ground. So this is trapped air that you can heat much easier than the ground. And that's how you stay so warm, right? Like,
I know, getting back to the layering whole topic. That's why they recommend if you need to layer up a little bit, if you have some newspaper or something, anything to create a little pocket of air around you to heat up.
Yeah.
But, I noticed you sent me a product there, Ben. Did you want to talk about that a little bit, or is that later in the show?
We can bring it up. It's something that I've seen it for years. I never had one in my hands before. And Sean Hill from Old Bastard Outdoors, he had one this weekend when he was with us, and he pulled it out and he lit it. And it was really neat because he lit it at, say, 9 o'clock at night just before we went to bed. It took a few minutes for the thing to warm up, but he pulled it out the next morning, and it was at least 12 hours later, and this thing was really warm. It was warm enough that it had to be in the little bag that came with it, and his was silver. I like this one because it's bright orange. I'm not going to lose. But it was still quite warm, and he could actually like feel the moment it went out, and it worked much better than I expected it to do. So it's a really neat little product. I was impressed by it, and I know they don't sell for, I mean, they sell for quite a bit at times, but it looks like you can pick one up for the $25 range, right? Like,
I think I've seen these at Canadian Tire and other big box stores as well, I believe.
I've seen a Canadian Tire. I'm pretty sure I've seen them in Princess Auto, Walmart. This one's on Amazon. I would definitely suggest people look around. The things I was told when I looked at it is basically once you light it, it's lit.
Oh, there's no putting it out kind of deal.
Yeah, there's no like snuffer or no easy option to shut it off. I don't know if you can like, put it in a Ziploc bag, if it would shut off on its own after a period of time. I'm not sure of everything. Like, I don't know a ton about it, but it did produce quite a bit of heat. And I think they're fairly reasonable priced. So if you shop around. So it's just an idea. I mean, I've used a lot of hand warmers before. I've used ones that you can throw in water and boil. And then there's a little metal plate you bend and it crystallizes the whole thing. I've used the chemical ones you open up. They're one-time use. I've used ones that are battery powered, but then you have to charge them up. And when you're camping, do you have a ton of power to recharge them?
And I get your point there. And each one of these has pros and cons. So the chemical ones you're talking about, I love those for my hands and stuff, especially put them in the pockets, but Much like you said, they're one-time use and they require oxygen. I have tried to use these in my boots to keep my feet warm while I was hunting and stuff in previous years. If you throw them in your boots and put your feet in, you cut off the air to them, they don't stay warm. They just, you know, they'll get warm for as long as they're in the air, and then a couple of minutes later, they're gone. Now, the ones you break open with the little tabs, you said, I've since moved on to those in my boots. They offer great heat, but they don't last as long. You're only getting maybe, what, an hour out of them, unless you get some really, really good ones. That's where the break open air ones. Those seem to go for several hours, and you still get a little bit of heat out of them.
I keep the body warmer ones, and I've thrown those in the bottom of, like, sleeping bags and stuff. Like the extra large ones, and I get mine at Princess Auto, but I've bought them at various places. I think they're all very similar. And I know I get a solid 12 hours out of them.
Yeah, that's about right. I think mine are marked for 10 hours, but there's still a little bit of heat afterwards. Yeah. Now, a product that my father-in-law actually tried here the other day, and I'm kind of impressed with, and I may pick a set up, electric socks. Have you seen these things? And you're talking about the ones that plug in and stuff.
Yeah,
and I have. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I have seen them. I've seen them at Mark's Work Warehouse and a few other places. And I've been interested in them. I think it would probably be good for a day or two between charges, just guessing.
Now, I have an opinion on these. So,
yeah.
Finish yours, and then I'll come back, and I'll tell you what I've learned by watching him use them.
Okay, no. I mean, that's what I see. I assume you could get like a day or two if you're conservative with your use on them. Maybe they'll last a lot longer than that. But I do wonder, like, if I'm in the woods, because I have not a socks, but a little unit here, and I just happen to have this. I did not. It is actually, I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's a hand warmer, as well as a flashlight. Yeah, I think this one's dead. And a power station for recharging your phone. A nice rig, but once it goes dead, you're waiting a while to charge it back up.
And if you're in the woods, once again, we've shown the solar panels and stuff we've had, but during the winter when you're using this, the sun's not as intensive. It's going to take a lot more to recharge up. Now, the socks that Jeff had, they ran on AA batteries. Now, you could use rechargeable AA batteries or standard AA batteries, whatever you want. The feeling I'm getting from them is like nonstop runtime. You're only getting about 30, 35 minutes out of them.
Yeah.
Now, the way I see these things, I still want a pair simply for this. You put them on, they're in your boots, you're doing your thing. If your feet get cold, snap them on for 3 to 5 minutes at a time. Gives you that boost of heat, gets your feet warm back up. Then you can turn them back off and off you go. You know what I mean? That's kind of where I see these things shining. I don't see them so much like the initial thought I had was, oh, what a great thing to have in the sleeping bag to keep your feet warm. Don't think you're going to get enough time out of them, and you won't have the... If you wanted to switch them on and off, you'd be up every 30 minutes kind of deal. You know what I mean? But I think if you just want to throw them in your boots, you have a good set of boots. If you're sitting around, because I just bought a set of winter boots. Haven't had a set of winter boots in like 7 years. Just bought a set, dropped some serious money on them. But if you're not moving around, even the best of boots will have a tendency, as your body cools off, it circulates that cooler blood. Your feet may start getting a little cooler. Me, specifically, I've fallen in the water a couple times. I've had hypothermia a couple times. Not great circulation in my feet. We've talked about this before again. I think they'd be great to snap on, warm my feet up. I'd be good for another 2-3 hours. You know what I mean? And I think they would shine in that instance, and that would be a great precaution. Is you don't have to rely on these things to keep you, or I should say, the precaution I would like to say on this is don't rely on them to keep you warm 100% of the time. Rely on them to get your heat back, and then you still have to figure out a way of maintaining that heat on your own, or at least preventing some of the heat loss on your own. You know what I mean? Because if you were wearing your sneakers and you threw these heated socks on, they'll keep your feet warm for like 30 minutes, and then the second the batteries die, your feet are going to instantaneously get cold because there's no thermal value there. Yeah. So wear some appropriate footwear in combination with these. I think you'd be really well set up.
Yeah. No, I can see that. And the reality is, too, like, once you get cold, like I said, it's really hard to not stay cold. Like, it's a lot harder to – and I guess there's your major precaution. Like, don't get cold.
I mean, yeah.
It's kind of like that old commercial, you know, worried about falling, just don't fall.
But it is true.
It is. And how do you do that? It's by thinking about what you're doing, taking reasonable precautions. So Like, last weekend is probably my last canoeing trip this year. And that's sad for me to say, but it is mid-November right now. December's just around the corner. And it's getting to the point where the waters are getting really cold. And if you're going out in a canoe, the likelihood that you're going to get wet goes up. And as opposed to the summer, when I'll wear like my drain makers, which are shoes that I can walk right in the water and the water just comes out, you can't do that this time of year. I can't get my feet warm. So when I went this weekend, I wore, and this was, I was different than everyone else that went with, I wore rubber boots. I got a bit of fun made of me. Like, I had people say, like, I can't believe you're in the woods here with rubber boots hiking through all this stuff. But on the flip side, I'm going through water. Like, we're walking on bogs and marshes, and I was the only one with dry feet going in and out.
I was going to say, when we went last October or 2 years ago in October to the where we boated across, we both had rubber boots on that time because it was getting a little cooler. Same kind of deal. It wasn't this cold, but it was getting cooler. And I think same mentality. If you have any chance of getting your feet in the water, keep that water out. And another thing I wanted to kind of cover here is, anybody listening, there is a difference between cooling off and actually getting cold. So cooling off is you have that feeling of you're starting to get cold. Being cold means you can't get that temperature back, in my mind. What about you, Ben? Does that kind of vibe any with you? Or?
Yeah, no, that's pretty accurate. Cooling off is when your temperature starts to lower. Cold is when you are, you know, you're to the point where now you're actively trying to increase your temperature. So if you're out working hard, you're going to want to cool off. And you do this, you know, automatically. You'll notice it. Like, if you're working hard, even on the coldest day of the year, there will be a time when you'll start to undo a zipper, or you'll take your gloves off, or you'll drop your hat. You'll do something to shed that excess heat. You know, when I was carrying a canoe up some pretty steep hills, one of the problems I had is that with all the gear on, I was actually overheating. Like, it was cold. Once I got up there, I'd throw some of that gear off and go back to it. Now, all of a sudden, I'm cool. And I'm running the risk of ending up cold. So now I got to put gear back on. So it's a constant balance all the time to trying to keep yourself in within a few degrees of your comfort zone. And once you get far below that, I think this is a good example, it's basically exponentially harder to gain degree.
No, and I completely agree. And another thing people need to realize is it does not take a lot of a temperature variance, like core body temperature, up or down, to really cause you some grief. You know what I mean? Like, dropping a full degree in body temperature, full degree Celsius, by the way, that really screws you up. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You don't have to drop too many degrees, and you're in a life threatening position.
Yeah, it doesn't take much. So I guess, kind of switching gears here a little bit, what, you know, cold water is kind of a thing we do or have a great potential off, especially when you're out walking around in the winter and stuff like that. You slip, you go into a river, you know, you're out doing maybe some ice fishing, or you're getting some last hunting in for the year, you're just out for a walk, maybe you are doing a little camping. Once you get wet, you got to get yourself dried off. So you have to have a plan in there. Assume you're going to get wet. Hopefully you never do, but it's one of those things. Plan for the disaster and hope it never happens. So I myself like to carry some sort of waterproof footwear. You know what I mean? And I like to have a backup pair of socks and a good method of starting a fire. Because if you do get wet, you got to get the wet clothes off. You got to get warmed up. I know, sounds like a no-brainer. A lot of people will be like, oh, my foot got wet, I'll just walk myself out. And truth be told, this is how I caught hypothermia once. And I mean, this was only a mild case of hypothermia this time. If you don't mind me going on a little story here, I know I'm talking a lot this episode, but it's something that's pretty close to me because I've had hypothermia multiple times. I have screwed up everything you can possibly screw up when it comes to cold weather. And I've survived it. And I don't want anyone else to really go down that path because a lot of it sucked. I have prolonged problems with my ears always getting cold, my feet always getting cold. I got patches of my face that don't grow hair in properly. Like, there is some long-lasting effects. But anyway, I was out smelt fishing. What's more, you know, Nova Scotia, or at least in my area, Marigot Mission, because this is when I lived in Miramichi, then smelt fishing. Everybody did it. This is when you could spear smelts and stuff like that. We went out. We were smelt spearing, me and a couple buddies of mine. Temperature was warm. It wasn't cold. It was above freezing, but this led to the ice separating from the shoreline. The tide came in, and now there's like an 8-foot gap between the ice and the shoreline. And, of course, being young and stupid, we're like, we can jump that. Problem is the ice leading up to the water is unstable as well. So if you got right to the edge and jumped, you might be able to make it. Problem is ice broke about 2 feet back. So Kerr splash, down we go into the water. And I'm only up to about, you know, stomach level. I get out to the parking lot. We had walked in, and I was planning to walk back out. Which, honestly, in my instance, probably would have been the better idea. But I was walking out. I seen a fella. He had gotten wet into. He was just getting into his truck. I was like, dude, can you give me a ride home? He was heading in my direction. He's like, listen, the cab was packed full of crap. He doesn't matter. He's like, just hop on back and I'll run you up the road. I'm like, sounds great. This all in my teenage head sounded like a good idea. Now, there's a bunch of things that went wrong here. And I can see you keep glancing up at me and smirking. So you know everything that's going wrong here. Number one, I was wet. I left the wet clothes on. I got in back of a vehicle. Now the vehicle is moving. It's got that wind chill blowing over me. I got cold really fast. And we're only talking, I drove less than 10 minutes. So from the time I hit the water until I got home, we're only talking maybe 25 minutes. You know what I mean? Cause I went in the water, got cold, walked up. It was only a 5-minute walk, talked to buddy, maybe 5 minutes from the time I jumped on back the truck till I got home, maybe 10 minutes. So like I said, 20 minutes. By the time I got off the truck, I could no longer feel anything below my waist. I don't remember cause I passed out when I got in the house, but apparently at the time I was living at home, my parents found my boots somewhere in the middle of the driveway. I walked out of them, didn't even know it. They found my pants closer to the house, completely walked into them, thought I was just getting, you know, cold drunk. Yep, walked right out of my pants, and I passed out in the kitchen. Just opened the door, face planted, and that's where they found me. And like I said, that was not over a long course of time, but I really expedited the problem by getting that wind blasting over me. And granted, you know, there might have been a little of this involved and a few other things that did not help my cause at the time. But yeah, it didn't take much. In my wildest dreams, I never would have assumed that would have, you know, put me down. But that literally knocked me out. I don't remember much of it after that. Apparently, they found me. They threw me in the shower, warmed me up probably a little quicker than they should have, which is another thing. If you are traveling with people and they do get to a spot where they really get cold, especially if they get wet, something like that, don't try and throw them right in a super warm environment and start feeding them hot liquids because, one, they can't tell if it's hot or not. Two, if you warm them up too fast, what happens is an aftershock drop in body temperature. And I'm not giving medical advice here, first of all. You know what I mean? This is just, I am telling you my experiences. So what happens when you get cold, as I'm sure everybody knows, your blood vessels constrict. So they want to take all the blood from your arms, legs, fingers, stuff like that, and try to pull it into the vital organs in your body, your heart, lungs, liver, brain, yada, yada, yada. Now you throw heat into the mix, all those blood vessels expand, and all that cold, partially frozen blood, maybe not partially frozen, but you know what I mean, really cold blood rushes to the core, drops your body temperature even faster. So there is a way to do it, and the way to do it is with medical professionals.
So, yeah, you're very right. Yes, and you know what you're talking about. There are a lot of risks, and one of them is actually that the cold blood can actually stop your heart. And that has happened. And the other one is ice crystals can actually move through your blood into the core and cause other issues. So you definitely want to be careful with that. And they do it in a hospital. If you bring them there, they're going to put, you know, they'll surround you with hot water. They'll circulate the water. They'll bring the temperature up at a controlled rate, and they'll be monitoring you. And if there's problems, they can deal with it. We won't notice a lot of this stuff. The method that I have been told is oftentimes just use body heat, because that's a pretty safe one. So if you had somebody who is in that position, and it's I'm somewhat hesitant to say this because somebody could always take it wrong, but you get as much skin-to-skin contact with people that are, you know, warm. You don't want to put them at risk. And, you know, honestly, what you're looking for right now is the largest, warmest, cuddliest person you can find, and just or a couple of them and just get between them with that cold person and wrap them up in some blankets and bring them up that way. If you had to in the woods, you don't have any other options. That's what you're looking for. You know, you're looking for your most overweight buddy that you can find or friend and get them to cuddle with you, because they can. They can save your life, right?
And it's documented. People have done this. And I mean, you know, the old movie cliche was literally you strip down naked and you both jump in the sleeping bag. First of all, you don't got to strip down naked. You can have a little bit of modesty there. Like, you know what I mean? But Ben is completely right. As much close contact as you can get, because your own body temperature is what their body temperature should be. Hopefully won't lead to that aftershock drop. But still, I mean, it's in an emergency situation. Hopefully the person hasn't gone to the point where that's really going to be an issue. It does take a little bit of time if you're not playing with a whole bunch of factors that really screw you up. Like I said, with me, I was wet. I was already kind of cold to begin with. You know, thin the blood out. It was a lot of things going wrong.
So one of the, we were talking about precautions. One of the precautions is to just keep dry clothes available. And someone said, well, is that always possible? Well, if you're going to spend time in the woods, if you're going to spend time away from a safe environment, it is. And it's as little as taking a small dry bag and having a full change of clothes in there. And it doesn't even have to be the warmest clothes you have. It just needs to be dry clothes. Because honestly, if me and you went out today for a hike for the day, you get 3-4 hours into the woods and then one of us falls into a lake, the best option you got is to get all that wet clothes off as soon as possible, like ASAP, and then take a second to dry yourself off. Like, don't go putting this nice new dry clothes on a wet body. Take a second. It may be as little as just standing there and doing jumping jacks for a couple of seconds naked or underwear, whatever you want to say, and get some of that to dry off, and then throw that dry clothes on you. You're going to be way better off. There's the other thing. Do something. Don't stop. If you're that cold and you just stop moving, your body's not building much more heat. So you want to be doing something vigorous. You run in a spot, do jumping jacks, whatever it takes. Stay out of the wind. Don't try to lose more heat by being in a bad location. Get shelter, get cover, whatever you can. Get as dry as you can, as quick as you can, and build up that heat. If you do that quickly, you won't have a problem. Yes, it's going to suck for a couple of minutes, but then you'll be fine. If you stay wet, went for a drive in the back of a pickup truck with the wind going over, you know, that's sucking the heat out of you fast, and it's going to take a while. You are probably pretty miserable for a day or two after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a lot of my body hurt, honestly. Like, I had no, I say, severe lasting effects, but kind of did. Like I said, I get cold really easy now in certain parts of my body and not the best circulation in certain parts of my body and things like that. But it's not a pleasant experience, freezing any part of your body. I've had severe frostbite once on my ears really bad prior to this, like to the point where they were frozen, you know what I mean? So, and they bounce back. And if anybody has had something that's really cold and it starts thawing, like starts getting warm, you know, that pins and needles feeling, well, picture that times 100 over the course of several days. It is very uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, you definitely want to avoid it. And to avoid it, just take these precautions, you know. Have a way to warm yourself up. We showed hand warmers today. We've mentioned various types. Having clean, dry clothing you can put in. I mean, the warmer, the better, obviously. But having at least a change of clothing available to you. If you're going with a group of people, you know, you don't even have to have necessarily a change for everyone, because not everyone is likely to fall in. But at least have a few changes of clothes within the group. So you have that option. If you went with a group of people and you didn't have full set of change of clothes, if everyone could loan a few pieces of clothing, like someone gives a jacket, someone gives an extra pair of pants or something, you may even be able to help them out that way, right? But find some way to get that wet clothes off and dry clothes on, and then you can start drying that clothes. Getting a fire, getting some kind of heat going quickly. So having a way to start a fire, produce heat, that's definitely going to help. What else?
Well, something you said that I kind of want to loop back to, and only for a split second, was you said it doesn't even have to be the warmest clothes. I can tell you right now, on back of that truck, even if I had rode the truck home,
yeah,
a pair of jogging pants and a sweater would have been far better than soaked clothes.
Oh, a million times better. And like, that's the thing, right? Cold, wet. We always said, you know, wet and cold is what you don't want.
Like, exactly.
That's a recipe for death. If you're not careful, wet and cold is as bad as it is. In the summer, you know, you can be wet and you'll be fine. In the winter, you can get cold and be fairly fine. But if you get wet and cold, you're truly cold. Like, and it's that's the thing. Like, stay dry. So the preventative things, wear the dry clothing. We mentioned rubber boots. We didn't necessarily mention a rain suit. Because if you're out this time of year, maybe it's going to snow. Maybe it's going to rain. But it doesn't take long to end up very wet. Have a way to dry clothes if it does get wet. Like, we were out for 4 days. We happened to have access to a wood stove while we were in the woods. That was awesome. We were able to dry clothes. Everyone's boots at some point in time, even my, because I had sneakers, got wet. When I was portaging in and out, I stayed dry. But while we were going around camp, I didn't wear the boots all the time. I had shoes. And at one point, I did fall in. In fact, I fell. A bit embarrassed to say this. I went to get water. I decided because the water close to the shore was dirty. I got into the canoe, pushed it out a few feet, was filling up the bottle, and I fell back into the canoe. The canoe tipped to one side, water rushed in, and I was soaked.
And it's that easy to do. You know, harmless little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't help that I had a couple of drinks.
And I'm assuming you were planning on getting wet. And that's the thing. Nobody ever plans to get wet.
No, I did not plan on getting wet. I tried really hard. That's why I got in the canoe. That's why I pushed off. And it just, you know, I lost my balance. I fell down. And I managed to get back up. I got out. I wasn't as wet as I could have been. But it could have been much worse. And I was close to a cabin that had a heated stove that we were fine. That's the good part of it. But there was the prepared. Like, I had a change of clothes. I had a change of boots. I had a spot I could go dry off. It was the best case scenario on something that could have easily, in a few slight situations different, meant the difference between a good trip and a really bad trip.
Oh, for sure. So, question from the comments. Steve asks, thoughts on emergency reflective blankets? And I did want to touch on these before the end of the show, but seems as good a time as I need to come into it, unless you had more to say on that, Ben.
No. That's a great topic. Emergency blankets, I've used them. They're good. They are very good. Their only limitation is they only reflect heat back if there's heat to reflect.
And that's the number one thing I was going to say as well. They don't produce heat, and it's not like wrapping yourself in a wool blanket. It just reflects back heat that you're already producing.
And even a wool blanket only only captures heat you're pushing out. So if you end up in a bad state of hypothermia where your body has basically stopped producing heat or any great amount of heat, you're going to be in a problem. But yes, if you're just got wet, got your wet clothes off, put that reflective on, there's still a lot of core temperature in there. It's going to keep that heat, reflect it back, help you warm yourself up. It's definitely going to work. It also keeps the wind off you. Those things are really windproof. And so it's going to stop that wind from robbing you of heat. Had you just get wet and just wrap yourself in that, at least the wind's not getting you. You can heat that area up. Because it's wet, it's not going to heat up as fast as you want because you're heating up that moisture. If you can get it dry, you'll heat up a lot quicker. They're great. And even try it. Take a couple of layers that wrap around a small blanket or a foam block. You can sit on a block of ice and you won't get cold. Right? Like, they work. There's cozies made of those that I know guys who put a piece of that reflective stuff inside of a couple of pieces of material. If you can get a couple of air gaps, like bubble wrap or Reflectix, which we've talked about in the past, you can get a very good, like, sit pad or under layer for under your sleeping pad. And it makes a huge, huge difference. That reflectiveness adds in an air gap on top of that, you have an awesome insulation value. And I would probably estimate with an air gap and a couple of reflective blankets, it's easy to get like an R5-6.
And I would agree. My thoughts on the emergency blankets, using them as a blanket, like people classically wrap them around themselves and they pull them in right tight. in milder weather. Once again, my own opinion. Not terrible. Super cold weather, probably not going to do you great. Better than nothing. Don't get me wrong. Better than nothing. Pound for pound, they pack up light. Always good to have one. But what I like them for, if you can get a tarp or something like that in conjunction with, make yourself a little lean-to or some sort of wall, and then get a fire in front of you, it will reflect that heat back and kind of into you. That's where I think they really shine, and a lot of people underestimate them, honestly. I keep one in my kit specifically for that reason. If I get wet or something like that, hopefully I still get the dexterity in use that I can make a small, like even just two poles in the ground, and you kind of strap it to that and put a fire in front of you. Doesn't have to be fancy. But it'll kind of, one, block the wind, two, reflect the heat. Almost kind of like you're making a little solar oven, but not really a solar oven. Well, literally an oven, and you're kind of trying to stay in the middle of it.
I actually have an emergency blanket that I keep with my search and rescue gear, and it just slides inside I have like a vest, and most people, if you ever pick the vest, wouldn't even know it's there. It's thin enough, and it's light enough that you I have taken the vest, like emptied it out a couple times and rediscovered it because I forget that I put it there sometimes. It's that small, that light, but it's a whole tent. Like two people can sleep in this tent. No doors. It's just like a tube that can be opened up in a triangular shape. I think it's like 8 feet long and 3x3.
I might have one of those too.
I picked up a dollar store, like of all places, and I think it's a great idea. And you could put a couple pieces in. Here's the thing, like any of these hand warmers that we talked about, like the Zippo one, or even a couple of the chemical ones, you throw those in with you, you can build up a fair amount of heat and try and trap it in there with you. That's going to make a huge difference. It's going to help because there's heat there to radiate back, and it's just going to keep that in there. And I think a lot of them say will reflect back like 99% of radiated heat. You still lose to the convection and the conduction. So you still need to have like an if you're sitting on that reflective thing, because it's only, less than a...
Oh, man, it's paper thin. It's thinner than paper, but...
Yeah. If you doubt it, take a block of ice, put it on top, put your hand on it. You're still going to feel that ice. Lift up a centimeter and put your hand above it, and then the chill from the ice won't really reach your hand. It needs that air gap. But, they're great, lightweight, easy to throw in your pack. Honestly, even if you're the biggest gram weenie in the world, it's not going to be the thing to put your pack overweight.
No.
And it's low ball.
Weigh nothing.
Right? What's my two, what do I always complain about? Weight and bulk. You know? Nope. Sometimes I can win on one or the other, but I've never, very few items I've ever found that said it has extremely lightweight, no bulk. Yeah. Gives me a lot of functionality, but an emergency blanket like that definitely is. Low weight, low bulk. And good potential.
No, I completely agree. And like I said, don't misunderstand. I'm not knocking them. I think you should have one on there. Just be aware of their limitations and alternate uses for them. That's it. And the last thing I want to cover on this topic here tonight was something I had jotted down, was the 1-10-1 rule. And I might have mentioned this in our past podcast, but do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so. But
okay, so the 1-10-1 rule. There's a thing called Cold Water Boot Camp. Used to be a free course online. It's just a video, and they talk about a lot of good things in hypothermia, and this is one of the things that stuck with me. So you have, when you hit cold water, and cold water is anything below, I think, 15 degrees Celsius, technically. But once you hit cold water, you get the initial splash, your body goes to a shock. Like, it tries to breathe in a big gasp of air. So you got 1 minute to catch your breath. So you got to kind of control your breathing. Don't hyperventilate, because if you hyperventilate, you possibly pass out. You go under, and now you don't got to worry about the cold water. Drowning's a lot more real possibility. But anyway, you got 1 minute to catch your breath. So that's your mindset. You got 10 minutes of useful dexterous movement with your fingers and feet and stuff like that. And that means if you're going to do a self-rescue, if you fall in ice, you know, classic thing, snowmobilers. Going across ice goes through. So you got about 10 minutes of dexterous movement. Not great dexterous movement, but dexterous movement where you still manipulate your fingers. If you got a set of ice picks, you can pull yourself out. You can use your belt to pull yourself out. You can kick your legs, things like that. And then you got 1 hour. Typically, this is not in all instances, but typically 1 hour before complete lack of unconsciousness. due to severe heat loss. Now that's the loose one on this one, being completely honest. The two important ones to remember is 1 minute to catch your breath and 10 minutes of dexterous movement. Don't be like, oh, I'm fine, somebody will be here in 45 minutes. Try and get your butt out of there, you know what I mean? It's a very loose 1 hour, and it depends on a lot of things like wind chill, how cold the water is it fresh water, is it salt water? There's a lot more that goes into this, but it's, you know, there is a, you can even type it into Google. Just type in 1-10-1 rule, and you'll get like 50 pages of stuff come up on this.
Yeah, I mean, 10 minutes doesn't seem like a long time, but it feels like an eternity when you're cold.
Yep. And I can vouch for that. And yeah, it's if nothing else, keep that in your mind if you're ever dealing with water. Because it's the first thing I think of anytime I go near, like, I think I've mentioned before, a volunteer firefighter. We do ice rescue. Kind of became my passion for the fire department after freezing a couple times. It's something I always think about anytime we get around water. Period. Like if it's just working on the shoreline, if it's working around a lake, river, first thing I think is 1-10-1 rule. So if something goes under, I gotta get control of my breathing. And we're back. So anyway, yeah. I have to encourage the person that potentially fell in the water, get control of your breathing. Like, oh no, you fell under, you're gonna get cold, get out. It's like, no, get control of your breathing. The first thing comes out of my mouth and then try to rescue them. They gotta get in the mindset. And that's especially the big thing I try to remember is, tell them to control their breathing, because if they start to hyperventilate, they can't help themselves, you can't help them. Because, I mean, I see it in the fire service, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, Ben, if you do get somebody in the water, and they see you, they start getting a little antsy, you try to jump in the water to help them, we're using life suits here, they're Mustang life survival suits, you can jump in the water, they clamp onto you. And you see this in even like lifeguards and stuff like that. People panic. Yep. They try to latch onto you. Problem is, they've now become basically a weight, and now you could both be in jeopardy. So you got to get them in the mindset of getting ready.
Well, I mean, when I was a kid and we were doing search and rescue, lifeguard, it was actually talked about. And I mean, this is, you know, 20 plus. More than 20, almost 30 years ago, it was talked about, like, sometimes the option is to knock the guy out. I don't know if they teach that anymore, but, like, if you have a drowning victim.
I don't know. I can't speak on that. I can tell you from my line of work that that's generally frowned upon. But, I mean, real world here.
But we're down to the point where it's your life or theirs, and you're trying to save them, and if you can, if it's coming down to you getting drowned by them, like, people have literally knocked people out and dragged them out and then brought them back because it was safer than trying to deal with, because a drowning victim is going to grab at anything, and it's, they're going to grab hard, they're going to have all their force in them, and they can cause you, well, they can injure you and they can drag you under, like you said. So you do have to be really careful when you're trying to rescue them. And like you said, it's hard to maintain your rational thought when you're freezing. It's really hard.
And especially because at a certain point when you get cold, it starts to hurt. And all you can think about is how much pain you're in and how you want it to stop. And I speak this one from experience. Unfortunately, I have seen a couple people that have frozen to death and things like that. And I've been told by people that have basically frozen to death and been brought back. They say, oh, it's not a bad way to go. I can tell you right now from freezing on my own, it's not a way I want to go. Maybe once you pass the pain, it's not so bad, but that pain is intense. And you got to realize that's all people focus on is the pain. It's at a certain point and they're going to latch a hold of you and do weird things. So you got to get them in the right mindset, all that good stuff.
I am not going to back that up. I have been close to drowning myself, and I'm not going to say that's painless.
Now, I've never been close to drowning. I've been close to freezing, and it sucks too. So, you know what? I don't think there's a good way to go. Kind of a morbid topic to end on, but you know what? Once again, ounce of prevention worth a pound of cure. Keep yourself warm. Plan not to get wet.
Yeah, so, but, you know, if you summarize everything we said today, and, you know, we've talked for close to an hour, which is about our average, I'd like to think. Stay dry, right? take the time or make sure you have a dry option if you do get wet. You know, have something that can help heat you back up. So hand warmers, sock warmers, electrical, we don't care what the method is, some way to heat you up. Fire, you need something to produce more heat. Keep dry clothes, and layers. Have clothing in layers that are going to help maintain temperature, because just as much as keeping yourself warm, you don't want to get yourself hot. Mm-hmm. Because if you get hot, you sweat, and then all of a sudden you have the other problem. And you can see it easy enough. You spend any time in the woods, this is a common one. You overdress because it's really cold in the morning. Now you're stuck with all this clothes. You have no way to shed any. But at midday, inside clothes are literally soaked. And you see people, like I've watched people come in out from the cold, you know, just hanging around town. They come in and they're just sweat stains under their clothes is dripping. And they were out in the cold. Well, I didn't get cold. Well, no, but had you stayed or stopped moving, all that moisture has to go somewhere. What's going to do? Your body's going to try to evaporate it. To do that, it's going to use up a ton of its energy, and you're going to be froze. If you're out for the night, there's hypothermia. Yeah. And you were warm. You were warm right up until you were cold. And then you had no way to come back from it because you soaked your clothes from your own sweat, your own time. So layers, be able to regulate your temperature throughout the day, because honestly, getting too hot is just as bad as getting too cold.
It'll lead to the other. 100%. And the last thing I'm going to add in on top of this whole summary is something you love to say, Ben, slow down. Take your time a little bit more. Things are slipperier. You don't always see what's under the snow. That ice may not be as safe as you think it is. Test things. Look around. Think a little bit more. Slow down.
Yeah, you can often get places faster by going slower.
And with less effort and a lot less damage.
And I think you've seen me prove that at times.
Oh, for sure.
Taking a few minutes, thinking your thing through, all of a sudden you're where you want to go. I see people rush all the time. In everything in life, they rush and end up spending 2 to 3 times the time they should have taken to do it right the first time. Take your time, think about what you're doing. It's going to save you a ton of time in the future. And I guess, we're going to call a wrap there, I guess.
Yeah. What was I about to say? Nope. Yep. I'm good. Let's call her a wrap for the night. I do know, like I said, this is a recap. A lot of it is quote unquote common sense. But the whole idea was get you thinking about this, you know? Yeah, maybe it is all common sense. Maybe you know this stuff, but it's just a refresher. A little kick in the pants, you know, a little verbal, entertaining kick in the pants to get you thinking about cold weather. Maybe go check your pack. Make sure that you had that extra set of clothes in there. Make sure you got that thermal blanket in there if that's your thing. Maybe a couple hand warmers. Maybe you throw an extra pair of socks in there. Maybe you start converting over to wool. Just get you thinking. We don't want to see anybody out there get cold for no reason, and God forbid, heaven forbid, whatever you want to say, somebody, you know, gets severely hurt or worse out there. When all you have to do is just take a little bit of time.
You hit one huge one, wool. 80% of your heat can be retained in wet wool.
Yeah. Wool is definitely the outdoorsman's best friend. And I do know a lot of people say, oh, I don't like the feel of wool and stuff like that. I can guarantee you're going to like the feel of freezing to death a lot less. I mean, to be blunt about it.
So, there's one last thing. I've forgotten all about it. When you're buying clothes, take the time to look at the label and see what it's made of. It makes a huge difference, you know. Cotton oftentimes looks and feels very similar to wool in some of these knitted sweaters and stuff. And you're like, oh, it's a sweater. It's wool. No, it's not necessarily. Take a look. It's probably acrylic and cotton half the time. You find a good wool sweater, it's a totally different instance when you're in the woods. And they're more rare than you think. Just a thought. Look for it. Make sure it is. And some people make things out of synthetic wool, which is not wool. You know? Keep that in mind.
Yeah, synthetic wool is not the exact same as wool. Because wool keep you a lot warmer when it gets wet. Synthetic wool will keep you warm. Not so good when it gets damp.
Yeah. The other products, down, you know. But down when it gets wet loses all its insulation. Well, not all, but like
a lot.
The significant amount of it, right?
Yeah, a lot. But so, anyway, just get thinking about it. Switch gears. Know the cold weather's coming, especially if you're in the Atlantic provinces here with us and you get those really moody swings of temperature fluctuations. Anything else, Ben?
No, that's it. Good to go. Get out there, have fun, enjoy yourself, take care.
Night all.
Night all.